tired of losing their loved ones. Of course, they want to shut the suspect's mouth. That's just what they want to do, you know. So it don't, I'm not going to say the dead can't talk. Me personally, I don't think a peaceful protest will bring change. I think that it need to be more action.
They've been lynching us for over 400 years. We're going to have to come together and stay conscious. They had us watching TV all the time and wanting to splurge with the money and the drugs. But we're starting to wake up now because the devil has many plans and we can't allow him to overcome us. So we fight him. We have to come together. We cannot do this separate. We have to come together.
It's a war in the streets, living in the end times. Revelations I speak, it's going down. I'm ready, it's going down. I'm ready, it's going down. I'm ready, it's going down. I'm ready.
There have been so many others killed by police since Mike Brown, sometimes sparking protests around the country and even some legislation changes. But so far, none of these efforts have led to a different reality. What is it going to take to bring about a change in America to this never-ending story?
The family falling apart, but tell me who really cares? In the heart of America, it's a real nightmare. Every day getting worse, every week getting fatal. Every month is disaster, every year going faster. Ozone is hurting, the West Coast on fire. The end times for certain, a new world for hire. This man-made corruption is soon to expire. Murder, lust, and greed is about to stand trial. Murder, murder, kill, kill, it's a war on the streets. Living in the end times.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome back to a new episode of
Youth Station.
I am Bita, and with me
is Mustafa.
Okay, so once again, we have the opportunity to be here talking about some controversial issues and topics. And the hot topic of today is the good parts of being greedy.
Greedy. So you're telling me that there are positive aspects of being greedy,
there may
right?
be.
There are definitely parts of, I think, positive aspects of being greedy, definitely.
Yeah.
For example, I would say you should be greedy when it comes to knowledge. Okay, that was the first thing that came to my mind. Like,
nice.
Okay. What I mean by that is, yeah, you should want more knowledge. You should go after more knowledge. You should be, you know, going after it as best as you can. I mean, what are some things that come to your mind?
I believe greed actually has a kind of negative context in it.
Right.
That, for example, when you are greedy, it means that you want more, even at the cost of sacrificing other people.
Right. Well, sometimes you don't have, when I'm talking about knowledge, you don't have to do it at the expense of others,
yeah.
right? What greed means you want more, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't
exactly.
always have to be at the expense of others,
yeah.
right? For example, I could be doing a job and I could be making, for example, you know, I could have a good business, but I want to expand that business even more.
Yeah.
That's a form of greed, isn't it?
I believe there is a good point and a good dimension about greed, and that's when it comes to self-development. Self-development can be about business, it can be about knowledge, it can be about your spirituality,
yes.
this and that. And this is the point and the time that you have to be greedy in order to upgrade yourself, in order to nourish your soul, to be a better person and a better human being. And these times are the times that you have to sacrifice other things in order to develop yourself. Like, for example, in order to develop your spirituality, you need to sacrifice some parts of your materialistic point of view. I mean, there is a cost for everything, and there is a huge cost for being greedy.
That's true. And this reminded me of the verse, one of the verses of the Holy Quran, where God says, you know, compete for good deeds. You know, he tells us, like, do business with me, you know, when it comes to good deeds. And we have also narrations which sort of point to the same thing, that yes, when it comes to good deeds and, you know, doing things for God and improving yourself spiritually, it's definitely not a bad thing to be greedy, right?
Exactly.
I think the self-development point is very, very correct.
Sure.
That that's where it comes in helpful.
One of the other things that we have to be greedy about is opportunities. You know, when it comes to opportunity, you have to have sharp eyes. And you have to be focused, attentive, and you pay a lot of attention to the environment in order to catch the opportunities that you have. Because most of the time, people focus on the difficulties and obstacles and bad dimensions of their life. That it may be natural because of the nature of survival that we have in ourselves. We need to be focused on bad things and threats, on dangers and harms. But I believe being greedy for opportunity will help you to open your eyes into the reality of life.
That's true. But what do you think about somebody who is becoming, a lot of times people become selfish because of their greed, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, that's something that I think we can discuss probably right after the break.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, welcome back to your listeners. This is Youth Station, and we're talking about the concept of greed. And I came to this point that...
Well, my question was that greed can sometimes make you really selfish, right? I mean, it could be even when you're doing it for positive things, like we've said, but it can still make you selfish. How do you control that selfishness from cropping up? That's what I'm like, kind of, that's the question that I have in my mind.
I get your question, actually. I believe that in our nature, we have some maybe bad characteristics like anger, like, for example, greed, like the desire to do bad things and so on. And these kind of characteristics, by their nature, are not bad. when mm-hmm. there will lead you to some consequences, to some actions that will harm other people and yourself, then you can call them bad characteristics. Mm-hmm. So greed, again, is one of these characteristics that is neutral, but based on the things that you do in order to nourish your greed and in order to actually satisfy the feeling that you have in your soul and in your actual brain, it can be something bad. So when talking about greed, I believe we are walking on the edge of a sword, okay? Mm. And this edge of a sword is so sharp, you have to be so attentive about the consequences of whatever you do with the intention of greed.
Well, I was thinking one way to sort of tackle that would be that selfishness is to sort of have collective greed, right? In the sense that whatever good you want for yourself, you should also then want that for others.
Exactly.
Right? In that way, I think you can sort of reduce that sort of selfishness inside of you and realize that everyone has similar needs. Everyone, you know, is going through the same many times problems and issues. And that if I want something good for myself, then I should want it for others as well, not just for myself, right? And for me, that's sort of a way that I personally try to cope and deal with my own greediness, right?
Nice one. Actually, the thing is, I believe the point that you mentioned that whatever you want good for yourself, you have to want it for other people. And this is the same for bad things. When you don't want harm for yourself, when you don't want bad things to happen for you, you shouldn't want them for other people. So if you are seeing that your greed is harming other people, then by your logic, you don't want to be harmed by this method, by other people, then you shouldn't harm other people by your greed too.
Definitely.
Okay, it's the way just the world works. It's just the way the life works, I believe. And another thing about greed is some people are addicted to be greedy. You know,
that's true.
They are addicted to collect some, for example, beautiful things for themselves. When they go to a restaurant, they are greedy about choosing the most beautiful piece of food. And when, for example, they go shopping, they are greedy about buying the most beautiful product. You know, for example, they even push you in order to reach whatever they want because they are greedy. I mean, sometimes this greed will actually lead you to a road of addiction and habit. So what is the solution of this problem that we make?
One place that you see people get greedy is when the dinner is served at weddings.
Exactly.
Okay? I don't know if you've seen, I don't know what it's like here in Iran. I haven't really been to an Iranian wedding.
Yeah.
But like back in Pakistan, it's just like as soon as the food comes out, people are just like, it's like a mob, like, attacking the food.
Yeah, same
you
here.
Know? And that's crazy. Even as a child, I remember seeing that. That would shock me, you know. It's like, these are adults. Like, we're adults. Like, why can't we just get in a line and, you know, be civilized? So it's strange how our greedy behavior will show up in, like, the most strange places, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Sorry, what was your question right before that?
The question was, what is the solution to this behavior that it will become to a habit?
Right. I think we have to realize that we live in a society, right?
Yeah.
And when we live in a society, like, if we only think about ourselves, you know, and our own needs, many times we end up trampling on other people's needs, right? And that could occur maybe even inside a home where a husband or wife could be, for example, greedy about one thing over another and not care about maybe the children's needs, the husband's needs, or the wife's needs, right?
Yeah, right.
So we have to be very aware that that behavior can be very destructive, right? A lot of times that, for example, when you'll see cases of like divorces or, you know, other family issues that come up, it's because one person is being way more needy than the other.
Yeah.
Or on the flip side, they're not recognizing the other person's needs.
Yeah.
So that's something that we learn about in psychology, and I'll talk a little more about that right after the break.
Okay.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So we're back from the break, and I was just saying that, you know, before we went to the break, that one of the things that we learn about in psychology is very much learning about other people's needs, right? And what that
All
means,
right.
for example, is that if you have a child who's between the ages of 0 to 10, he has different needs from a child who's between the ages of 10 and 20.
Which is something natural.
Right. But, you know, I didn't, it's natural, but up until I started studying it, I didn't really think about it. I didn't think about that, you know, my kid has very specific needs that I have to meet. Right. In the same way, it's the same for my wife or like for a woman, for her husband. It requires expertise and knowledge.
Yeah.
Like it's not just like common sense that you think about it. I think that's a really like sort of positive way to deal with our inner greed and in our inner, you know.
I believe it was a kind of practical solution to the problem of habit of greed. And actually, we talked about greed itself, that it can be controlled. And it depends on what kind of sort of things you are greedy. For example, if you're greedy about having more knowledge, then it's okay to actually develop this greed in yourself because it will lead to the self-development and to be more knowledgeable. But you have to be attentive about this point, that at what cost you are greedy.
Exactly. It can be a very positive thing, like you were saying. And, you know, we have examples of like, for example, one of my teachers tells us about this case where a husband was so much into like, you know, studying and like praying and all those things. He was completely ignoring his family, right, and their needs. And that obviously will lead to issues. Or we even have like another narration from like the Prophet's time, from Imam Ali's time, where a brother came and he said, you know, my brother, he spends all of his time in the mosque. He's always on the prayer mat.
Yeah, we have this story.
Right? And Imam Ali then brought him and pretty much scolded him. He said, you know, you should be looking at other things. So it's good to be greedy about those positive things as long as you're leaving a balanced life and you're meeting other people's needs as well, I think.
So I believe we have to keep the balance between the dimensions of the life that we are greedy in. For example, you shouldn't let your greed in a specific thing, even if that specific thing is productive, is something good like knowledge, let you be departed and detached from other dimensions of your life. And another thing is that the only thing I believe you have to be greedy about, and it has no side effect, and actually it has a lot of good consequences of your life, is to be greedy to have the love and satisfaction of Allah Almighty.
Definitely. To remember Him as much as we can. In fact, we have verses of the Quran, like, you know, which says that, or narration which says, you know, there's one thing that you can't do enough of is remembering God, right?
Yeah.
And I should clarify, that doesn't mean that, you know, you should always have like a tasbih, you know, beads in your hand.
No, it's not like that.
Remembering God, the way it was defined is, you know, you don't disobey Him, right?
Yeah.
That is the best remembrance of God that anyone can do, is to not disobey Him.
For sure, there are so many different aspects to actually have the love of Allah Almighty. And doing prayers or something like that is not the only way to get close to Allah Almighty. Sometimes even helping, I don't know, a poor child in the street is one of the most beautiful ways in order to reach Allah Almighty. And the thing is, we have to consider these different dimensions of life all together and don't be focused only on one way, on one thing. I don't know, it doesn't matter if this thing is materialistic or spiritualistic. In both ways, we have to keep the balance and be moderate.
Yeah, you're definitely right. You know, it's not easy, by the way. All the things that we're discussing, you know, I don't think they're very easy tasks.
Life is not supposed to be easy.
They're difficult tasks, but I think we're all wanting a peaceful and happy life, right?
Yeah.
One of the sort of positive things about, you know, that we talked about in greed is that if you want a better life, then you have to be greedy for that better life in the right manner, right? That's what we've been emphasizing,
that
we want to sort of do things in the right manner. And yeah, that's the challenge of life. I think everyone's struggling with that. It's not easy.
Exactly. So thank you, brother, for sharing your time and your knowledge with me here, and for not being greedy about your own knowledge to keep it all for yourself. So, and thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us. I hope this episode was actually useful for you. And that was all the time we had for today's episode. So, wassalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings, be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Allah, Allah, Ya Allah, Allah, Ya Allah, Allah, Allah.
In the limelight.
The World Health Organization, WHO, has raised the alarm over the inhumane humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip, which continues to deteriorate as the Israeli regime bombs keep falling on the besieged territory. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Middle East Eye has covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations reports gross human rights violations, including possible war crimes during the Israeli regime's ongoing genocidal war in Gaza. The United Nations Human Rights Office provided the information on Friday, 23rd of February, in its annual report. The Israeli regime has been waging the military onslaught since 7th of October last year, in response to Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, a surprise offensive staged by Gaza's resistance groups against the occupied Palestinian territories. The Israeli regime has simultaneously been employing an all-out siege against Gaza, preventing the flow of water, food, electricity and medical supplies into the territory. So far, the war has massacred tens of thousands of innocent people, many of them women and children. The United Nations report said the Israeli onslaught has led to massive suffering of Palestinians, including through the massacring of civilians on a broad scale, extensive, repeated displacement of people, destruction of homes and the denial of sufficient food and other essentials for life. The United Nations report added the blockade and siege imposed on Gaza amount to collective punishment, and may also amount to the use of starvation as a method of war, which are all war crimes. The report identified three emblematic Israeli strikes, two on the Jabalia refugee camp and one on Gaza City, which led to massive casualties and material damage. The United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Volker Turk, said, "Launching an indiscriminate attack resulting in death or injury to civilians, or an attack in the knowledge that it will cause extensive, incidental civilian loss, injury or damage, are all war crimes." In a broader context, the UN official reflected on the Israeli regime's decades-long occupation of the Palestinian territories. Volker Turk said, "The entrenched impunity reported by our office for decades cannot be permitted to continue. There must be accountability for violations seen over 56 years of Israeli occupation and the 16 years of blockade of the Gaza Strip." The Israeli regime came into existence in 1948 after occupying huge swathes of Palestinian territories during a Western-backed war. It occupied more land and in particular the West Bank of the River Jordan, including the city of Al-Quds and the Gaza Strip, in another such war in 1967. Ever since, it has built hundreds of settlements upon the overrun territories and deployed the most aggressive restrictions on the movement of Palestinian population there. Tel Aviv withdrew from Gaza in 2005, but has been keeping the territory under an all-out land, aerial and naval siege since 2006. We'll be right back. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The Brazilian president has repeated his recent assertion that the Israeli regime is committing genocide in the Gaza Strip, braving the repercussions that have come to affect his country's ties with the Israeli regime and its main ally, the United States. President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva said at an event in Rio de Janeiro on Friday, 23rd of February, "What Israel is doing is not a war, it is genocide, because it is massacring women and children." President Lula da Silva added, "It is a genocide. Thousands of children are dead and thousands are missing. Soldiers are not dying. Women and children are dying at the hospital. If that's not genocide, I don't know what genocide is." President Lula da Silva, who once again spoke in favor of the creation of a free and sovereign Palestinian state, said, "I do not exchange my dignity for falsehood." No earlier than on Sunday, 18th of February, President Lula da Silva had unequivocally lambasted the Israeli regime's savagery in its military aggression against the coastal territory, which has so far claimed tens of thousands of Palestinian lives, many of them women and children. Addressing an African Union summit in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, President Lula da Silva said, "What's happening in Gaza isn't a war, it's genocide. It's not a war of soldiers against soldiers, it's a war between a highly prepared army and women and children." The Brazilian Foreign Ministry confirmed afterwards that the country's ambassador to the occupied Palestinian territories had been recalled for consultations, adding that it had also summoned the Israeli envoy to Brasilia. This is not the first time that the Brazilian president has singled out the Israeli regime for criticism since the onset of its military onslaught on Gaza. Speaking after a meeting with his Egyptian counterpart, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, in Cairo recently, President Lula da Silva said Israel's behavior in Gaza has no explanation. The Brazilian president added, "With the pretext of fighting the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, Israel is massacring women and children." Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. The World Health Organization, the WHO, has raised the alarm over the inhumane humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip, which continues to deteriorate as the Israeli regime bombs keep falling on the besieged territory. The World Health Organization chief, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, called for an immediate halt to Israeli war crimes in Gaza and demanded unhindered access to international aid for the population of Gaza. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said Gaza has become a death zone. Much of the territory has been destroyed. The head of the United Nations Health Agency also criticized the Israeli regime's military forces for bombing hospitals and medical facilities in Gaza. He said, "What type of world do we live in when hospitals must close because there is no more power or medicine to help save patients and they're being targeted by military forces?" Ghebreyesus also expressed concern about civilian malnutrition amongst the population of Gaza, which has shot up dramatically since the war started, from under 1% to more than 15% in some areas, putting more lives at risk. Also, the United Nations staff members who help evacuate critically wounded patients from Nasser Hospital in southern Gaza Strip have described appalling conditions in the territory's second-largest medical facility, saying it has turned into a place of death. Jonathan Withall, a senior humanitarian affairs officer at the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, in the occupied Palestinian territory, said, "The conditions are appalling. There are dead bodies in the corridors of the hospital. Patients are in a desperate situation. This has become a place of death, not a place of healing." Jonathan Whittle, who took part in evacuation missions along with teams from the World Health Organization and the Palestine Red Crescent Society on 18th and 19th of February, raised concern about conditions of dozens of patients and staff who remain trapped inside the hospital building amid intensified Israeli bombardment.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Allah's grace is always accessible to a human being. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It is an honor to be here, dear friends, at your service, talking about Islamic lifestyle on A to Z. Now, what's really important here and what we're talking about is this idea that God's divine grace is always accessible to a human being. Now, you know, in our Islamic lifestyle, there are certain physical things that we need to do. There are certain actions that we need to take. And of course, there are certain actions which, you know, we should not take, which is known as sins, you know, and ma'asiyah and dhamb. You know, these are different words which are used in the Quran and the traditions for sinning or committing sins, errors, mistakes, disobeying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Allah the Almighty and the Exalted. So, you know, these are things that are related to our actions, and there are certain things that are related to our thoughts and our speech and our hands and our feet and our ears, right? But there's another set of things in Islamic lifestyle which is really important, and those are these kind of fundamental concepts or this ideology or this creed or belief system or aqidah, as it is known as Arabic, that we have this belief, this creed, right? These fundamental concepts. And these concepts, they need to be very, I guess, firm in our mind, and we really need to believe them, and we really need to understand them so that we can live Islamic lifestyle in its comprehensiveness, right? Just to add before we move on to the next segment here, you know, this is not just a one-sided lifestyle. It is a comprehensive lifestyle. It involves the spiritual needs of a human being, the physical needs of a human being, the actions of a human being, the behavior, the speech, as well as the thoughts, you know, and the fundamental pillars in our ideology, you know, which seep into our soul. All of these things together are what creates a Islamic lifestyle. And one of those fundamental concepts, you know, is this idea that God's divine grace is always accessible to a human being. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how God's divine grace is always accessible to a human being. Now, yes, this is in itself, the statement is correct. God's divine grace is always accessible to a human being. And this is something that we always need to believe, because it is really important when it comes to different aspects such as forgiveness or hope or, you know, trying to become close to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, trying to perfect ourselves despite some kind of imperfections that we might have. So this is a very fundamental concept that we have to believe in, right? But we shouldn't fool ourselves thinking that, well, God's divine grace is always accessible to a human being, so I'll just do whatever I want and I will just commit
as many sins, or I will just, this is not a big deal, and I don't need to follow the commandments because God's divine grace. No, that is taking the concept and fooling ourselves. And not only will we fool ourselves, but we will determine our fate, and it is not going to be a good fate, that's for sure, to say the least. This is trying to fool God, and is trying to fool ourselves, and God, the Almighty, is not a being that can be fooled in any way, shape, or form beyond imagination. So we're only fooling ourselves. But it is always accessible to a human being. The caveat here is that an individual must purify themselves. They must refrain from committing sins. When you refrain from committing sins, you purify yourselves. On the other hand, an individual in their Islamic lifestyle needs to do those things which are wajib. That too will purify us. And the more we become purified, then the easier it is to attain God's divine grace, which is always accessible to a human being. And of course, all of this will have a very positive and beautiful effect on our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The clock has started ticking on Donald Trump's $454 million penalty. Donald Trump will owe 9% interest on the total judgment each day until he pays the fine. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story. The clerk for New York County Supreme Court signed and entered the judgment order on Friday, 23rd of February, in former President Donald Trump's civil fraud case, in which he owes $355 million in fines, plus approximately $100 million in interest. Shortly after, New York Attorney General Letitia James filed a notice of entry in the case, which started the clock on Donald Trump's financial penalties in the case, which come to $454,156,000 in disgorgement and prejudgment interest. Trump now has 30 days to appeal the case to New York's Appellate Division, First Department. In order to stay the execution of the fine in the case, the former president needs to post a bond or put cash into an escrow account to cover the fines plus interest according to Letitia James. The judgment also bars Donald Trump from leading any New York company for 3 years, and his sons Eric and Donald Trump Jr. are barred for 2 years. Until he places the full amount of the fine into an escrow account, Donald Trump will owe 9% interest on the full judgment, or over $3 million per month. Last Friday, Judge Arthur Engoron found Trump and his sons liable for a decade of fraudulent business activity, ordering the defendants to pay a total of $464,576,000 in disgorgement and pre-judgment interest. Trump has denied all wrongdoing and has vowed to appeal the case. President Trump will, of course, appeal and remains confident the appellate division will ultimately correct the innumerable and catastrophic errors made by a trial court untethered to the law and to reality, Trump's lawyer Chris Keyes told ABC News in a statement. If Trump is unable to pay the bond, New York Attorney General Letitia James told ABC News that her office is prepared to ask the court to seize Donald Trump's assets. If he does not have funds to pay off the judgment, then we will seek judgment enforcement mechanisms in court, and we will ask the judge to seize his assets, Letitia James told ABC News. Earlier, the judge in Trump's civil fraud case had rejected a request from the defense to delay the enforcement of the penalties in the case. The defendants had asked Judge Arthur Engoron to delay the enforcement of the penalties by 30 days to allow for an orderly post-judgment process. "You have failed to explain, much less justify, any basis for a stay," Judge Engoron wrote in an email posted on Thursday, 22nd of February, to the court docket. "I'm confident that the appellate division will protect your appellate rights." New York Attorney General Letitia James says she's prepared to seize Donald Trump's buildings if he can't pay his $354 million civil fraud fine. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. Donald Trump was formally ordered by a New York judge to pay $454.2 million after being found liable for manipulating his net worth in a civil fraud case brought by New York State's Attorney General. The payment includes the $354.9 million penalty that Justice Arthur Engoron of the State Court in Manhattan ordered on 16th of February, plus interest, following a non-jury trial that stretched over 3 months. Judge Arthur Engoron also ordered Donald Trump's adult sons, Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, to each pay nearly $4.7 million, and the Trump's organization former chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg, to pay $1.1 million, all including interest. The payouts total $464.6 million and were determined on Thursday, 22nd of February. More than $114,000 of interest will continue accruing daily, mostly for Donald Trump alone. The judgment was made public on Friday, 23rd of February. New York Attorney General Letitia James accused the defendants of illegally overstating the value of Trump's properties in order to inflate his net worth and obtain better loan and insurance terms. Judge Engoron also banned Trump from 3 years from serving in a top role at any New York company or seeking loans from banks registered in the state. His adult sons received 2-year bans from leadership roles. The judge said the defendant's complete lack of contrition and remorse borders on pathological. Judge Engoron's decision threatens the business empire that Donald Trump built over much of his adult life. The Republican former president also faces 4 unrelated criminal prosecutions in which he has pleaded not guilty as he seeks to regain the White House from Democrat Joe Biden. Trump has accused Letitia James and Judge Engoron, both Democrats, of being corrupt and called the case part of a witch hunt by political opponents. He plans to appeal his penalty to the Appellate Division, a mid-level appeals court, but would have to come up with the money owed to obtain a bond. Judge Arthur Angoron rejected a request by Clifford Robert, a lawyer for the defendants, to delay enforcing the judgment for 30 days in order to allow an orderly post-judgment process, particularly given the magnitude of the judgment. In a Thursday morning, 22nd of February email to Clifford Robert, Judge Angoron wrote, "You have failed to explain, much less justify, any basis for a stay. I'm confident the Appellate Division will protect your appellate rights." CBS News has also covered the same story and tells us more. The judge who ordered former President Donald Trump to pay $354 million in fines and nearly $100 million in interest in his civil fraud case in New York denied a request from Trump's lawyers to delay formalizing his decision. In an email to Trump's legal team and lawyers from the New York Attorney General's office on Thursday, 22nd of February, Judge Arthur Angoron of the New York State Supreme Court said he would sign a judgment proposed by the state that finalizes his ruling. "You have failed to explain, much less justify, any basis for a stay," he wrote, addressing Trump attorney Clifford Robert. He added, "I'm confident that the Appellate Division will protect your appellate rights." Last Friday, Judge Angoron ruled that Donald Trump and the Trump Organization must pay a total of $453.5 million in fines, plus interest, for orchestrating a decade-long scheme to inflate the value of assets to obtain more favorable loan and insurance terms. He barred them from seeking loans from financial institutions in New York for 3 years and said an independent monitor would oversee the company for the same amount of time. Donald Trump is also banned from serving as an officer or director of any New York corporation for 3 years. The decision includes a variety of fines and sanctions for several other defendants, including Donald Trump's two elder sons. Trump has vowed to appeal the ruling and has harshly criticized Judge Angoron and New York Attorney General Letitia James, alleging they pursued the civil case for political reasons. On Tuesday, the Attorney General's office proposed a judgment that laid out the penalties included in Judge Angoron's order. Clifford Robert, Trump's attorney, objected to the proposal, writing in a letter to Judge Angoron that it was an improper unilateral submission that fails to provide any notice whatsoever, thereby depriving defendants of the opportunity to be heard before judgment is entered. Trump's lawyers asked Judge Arthur Angoron on Wednesday to postpone enforcement of the judgment for 30 days, arguing in a separate letter that the delay would allow for an orderly post-judgment process, particularly given the magnitude of the judgment. Judge Angoron replied over email that the proposed judgment accurately reflects the spirit and the letter of the 16th of February decision and order, and said he intends to sign the proposed judgment this morning and to send it to the clerk for further processing. Clifford Robert made one final plea on Thursday morning, 22nd of February, saying, "There is no exigency or potential prejudice to the Attorney General from a brief stay of enforcement of the judgment, while the prejudice to the defendants is considerable." The judge, however, said Trump's attorney had failed to explain, much less justify, any basis for a stay.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
all of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel. Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Ayatollah Khamenei's opinion on Imam Mehdi. Imam Mehdi's birth anniversary is a manifestation of optimism about the future. April 30th, 2018. The 15th of Sha'ban is the embodiment of our hopeful outlook towards the future. All the hope that we invest in something may or may not have the outcome that we hoped for. However, the hope towards the final salvation by the absolute Wali, representative of God, of the Almighty God, the Imam of the time, may God hasten his reappearance, and may our souls be sacrificed for his sake, is an inviolable hope. It is not only Shias that have made this claim. It is not only Muslims that have made this claim. All religions of the world are waiting for such a day to come. Our privilege is that we know him. We feel his existence. We believe in his existence. We speak to him. We address him. We make requests to him, and he grants us our requests. This is the difference between us and others. Others, non-Shia Muslims and non-Muslim believers, believe in something that is vague. However, this is not the case with us Shias. It is clear what we want and whom we speak to. The 15th of Sha'ban is a day of hope.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Seeking intercession from Imam Mehdi alayhi salam is a means for expressing obedience to God. May 10th, 2017. As for the Imam of the time, may God hasten his reappearance and God's greetings be upon him. The first point is that the great personality is the inviter to God. Looking at that great Imam alayhi salam is a way of expressing one's love for and obedience to Allah the Exalted. Greetings be upon you who invite to God and who are conversant with his signs. All matters, all prophets, all saints, all sanctities, and all pure souls who cast light on our lives, on our world, and on the entire universe are the signs and reflections of God. This is a point that should receive attention. We pay attention to the Imam of the time, alayhi salam, and we appeal and show humbleness before that great Imam, alayhi salam, so that this humbleness reaches the essence of the Only One, and so that we show our obedience to Allah the Exalted.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Russia, Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Iran Zamzam's company is poised to replace two major international soft drink brands in the region, driven by a growing boycott sentiment against Israeli army-associated products following the Gaza conflict. Having already entered markets in Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, and the UAE, the company aims to export 4 million cans of its popular soda to Kuwait, making a significant milestone in its expansion efforts.
My concept revolved around organizing a festival exclusively showcasing Iranian products. However, following the conflict in Gaza and the overwhelming positive feedback we received, we expanded our vision to encompass Turkish and Kuwaiti products as well. The event is spanned 2 months, during which we received numerous requests for an extension. Our primary objective at the society remains to spotlight Iranian, Kuwaiti, and Turkish goods, particularly as consumers are actively seeking alternatives to products associated with Israel.
Zamzam's growth in the Persian Gulf soft drink market is reinforced by its official replacement status for soda drinks in Kuwait alongside local brands like LC and Kenzo. The Iranian-Turkish festival organized by the biggest societies in Kuwait, Al Jabriya, has been instrumental in promoting Zamzam and other locally made alternatives as primary substitutes for boycotted products, significantly boosting Zamzam's popularity and market presence in Kuwait.
We're also operating as a retail seller, catering to the demand for products from Iran, Turkey, and Kuwait, which many customers have been requesting. While we understand that implementing boycotts can be challenging to achieve rapidly, it's not unattainable. Therefore, in response to the tragic events in Gaza, we've completely redirected our focus towards promoting locally made products through a campaign titled Support Us to Ice. The response has been phenomenal, with our sales soaring. Moreover, numerous other societies in Kuwait have chosen to follow suit and advocate exclusively for Iranian, Turkish, and locally produced goods.
The shift in consumer preference toward locally produced alternatives like Zamzam is emblematic of the broader economic repercussions of the conflict in Gaza. Major multinational corporations, including Starbucks, McDonald's, and Pepsi Cola, have experienced a significant decline in sales as consumers increasingly opt for products that align with their values and principles. As Zamzam continues to expand its footprint in the GCC countries, particularly in Kuwait, there is a shift in consumer behavior toward more regional products, and particularly the one from Iran, from other GCC countries, which is why the public in Kuwait is shifting into buying more products that are not associated in any way possible with the United States or Britain. This is Farah Al Hashim, Kuwait City, from Al Jabriya area.
As the Pakistan Super League kicks off for its highly anticipated cricket matches, an unexpected controversy has emerged, leading to widespread calls for a boycott among Pakistani fans.
Oh, that is clear of all fielders.
The uproar stems from KFC's association as a sponsor of the tournament, with critics citing the fast food chain's American roots and linking it to the United States' support for Israel's onslaught on Gaza.
We condemn KFC as a sponsor of our national cricket event. KFC represents a company with ties to Israel. Israel is involved in the killing of thousands of innocent men, women, and children in Gaza.
Meanwhile, activists are pushing to boycott the event, urging fellow Pakistanis to refrain from attending matches in person and instead watch the games online from the comfort of their homes. The move not only expresses dissent, but also hits the tournament organizers where it hurts the most, their ticket sales and on-ground merchandise purchases.
I am part of the boycott movement because I believe it's important to stand up for the people of Gaza.
By watching online, I am not contributing to the ticket sales or on the on-ground merchandise purchases, which are the main sources of revenue for the organizers. It's a way of hitting them where it hurts.
Usually we would go to the ground, but this year I think a lot of even cricket fanatics have chosen not to just because they want to boycott KFC as their main sponsor. But me personally, I've been skipping a lot of matches as well, because we need to show solidarity for Gaza and stick with our brothers and sisters. I think that's more important.
Social media platforms have been flooded with hashtags such as #BoycottPSL and #NoToKFC as disillusioned fans express their discontent over what they perceive as an endorsement of American policies that they vehemently oppose.
The widespread boycott of an international cricket tournament by the passionate cricket-loving nation of Pakistan not only signals solidarity with the people of Gaza, but also serves as a powerful expression of discontent towards the businesses associated with the US and Israel. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.